You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
We're talking about navigating relationships while managing OCD. Now, whether romantic, platonic, or professional, relationships can be impacted by OCD. From explaining rituals to managing misunderstandings, relationships often require careful communication and support. And so today we want to look at how people living with OCD can maintain healthy connections and how their loved ones can respond with compassion and with patience. And we also know from the past few conversations we've had with Dr. Jerry that sometimes the things that we do, thinking that we're helping, we're actually making things worse. We're not helping at all. So I'm really looking forward to having our eyes opened in this conversation. Dr. Jerry Bezuidenhout joining us on the line now. Doc, good morning and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Bongi. Good morning, listeners.
Thank you for joining us once again. And I think there's going to be so much more to learn about our role as family, friends, colleagues of people going through OCD in this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me again, Bongi.
Yes. Now, Doc, in what ways can OCD affect relationships with partners, with friends, with colleagues?
Well, there's various ways that it affects it, and it's predominantly a negative impact that it has, because the nature of the illness doesn't provide pleasure.
Right.
And the suffering, remember, when we're involved in relationships, we tend to share each other's suffering as well. So what the person with OCD experiences, that gets transferred over into the family members as well. Mm. So that when you break it down, you know, there's different levels that you can look at it. So in terms of social interaction, because a lot of the compulsions that's associated with OCD, people tend to socially isolate themselves. We all have this sort of automatic dignity protecting activities that we do. And subconsciously, people know that by washing their hands 30 or 40 times, that it's abnormal. So they hide it. And often by hiding it, they also have to withdraw from society. And that can then sort of reduce the sort of interaction with family, but also, you know, when the family is closely knit and, you know, they want to do stuff together, it can also socially isolate the family because they, you know, they're always late because they have, you know, the person is checking the door 50 okay. times, so it takes an hour to leave.
Yeah.
Then on a communication level, there's often difficulties from both sides. The person with OCD often struggle to express their emotions and their needs because it's so much focused on the intrusive thoughts and the compulsions that they struggle to identify what their sort of emotional needs are. And also their sort of social and spiritual needs. So they, you know, that kind of communication to the rest of the family becomes disturbed.
Right.
They also, you know, they tend to live in their heads. And then they struggle to communicate. And they often don't feel understood by the family. And the family often feel that they're not being heard by the other person or the one that suffers because they keep on repeating the same kind of behavior.
Right.
Now, the emotional strain on families is quite significant. Like I said, being late, you know, an hour late, you know, every time you have a social commitment has an impact. And if there's very dominant kind of clinging behavior, that can place an emotional strain on the family. And then an interesting one is when a person is so busy with these rituals and their compulsions, they often can't fulfill their normal responsibility in their household. And then other family members need to take that over.
And they pick up the slack,
Remember that lady I told you about that irons every piece of clothing four times?
Yes.
She's so busy ironing that her daughter has to do the cooking because she's too busy ironing.
Sure.
And that can place a strain on it. So in general, if it's, you know, OCD it's not just the person that suffers as well. It's the family and the people around them that suffers.
Yeah.
In a work environment, both people with OCD and their colleagues struggle a lot. Mm-hmm. I've worked with a colleague that had OCD, and he would spend hours and hours in the wards because he's trying to do everything in a certain way to avoid mm-hmm. some sort of negative impact. So he would always leave between 10 and 12 at night.
Sure.
But then he became so tired, we had to take up his on-call and some of his responsibility trying to alleviate the stress on him as well. So it really, it runs in a negative cycle.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, this thing really is far-reaching, hey?
It is. Yeah, it is. And what you often find when someone's compulsions around cleaning and sort of avoiding contamination, mm-hmm. they can expect that their partner, if they don't wear the same clothing, they're not allowed to wear the same pajamas every day, or they have to have certain rituals around outside clothing and inside clothing. Mm-hmm. And they expect them, that they have to sort of adhere to those compulsions. And that can place a big strain on the relationship because it's not a safe place for either person, not the person suffering and their partner either.
So how then can someone with OCD explain their condition to people close to them who might not necessarily understand?
I think keep it simple, in simple terms. Don't try and use medical terms. And the worst way is to describe them in terms of having these unwanted and, sort of thoughts or images that don't give pleasure, and that it's repetitive. Mm-hmm. And then it creates distress. And then, the behaviors are also repetitive. It doesn't give pleasure. I think, stressing the fact that this illness is not pleasurable, mm-hmm. It breaks down that sort of idea that the person is getting pleasure from this kind of repetitive behavior, because that's normal. If we do something, we enjoy it. But this is not enjoyable. Having these thoughts is quite distressing. It's unwanted. Mm-hmm. But yet, the brain is ill.
Yeah.
I've often found that if patients use the term, it's a brain illness, mm-hmm. That affects the emotions, the emotional networks in the brain. It helps other people understand this is not just behavior or a liking.
Yeah.
There's actually an illness behind it.
So, and what is the aim as we communicate that, as we, inform our families or try to educate our families on the condition, what are we hoping to achieve with that? Are they supposed to play along with us? Are they supposed, what's supposed to happen? What is the goal of that?
Well, the goal is to differentiate between the illness and the person.
Okay.
Because if I really want to help the person, then I need to identify what are their sort of their goals in life, what their likes and dislikes are, mm-hmm. and then what's the pattern of the illness. And then we can differentiate and see how do I support you as a person, but I'm not playing into an illness, the kind of compulsive behavior that is actually not helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Because the person who's got the illness sort of unconsciously want the other people to do exactly as they do. They must also go through these kind of compulsions because then they feel better.
Yeah.
Or they think they feel better. And if the family knows, but hey, that's the illness pattern. It doesn't matter whether I do this once or I do it 600 times. It doesn't change the illness.
Right.
So
yeah.
No, I'm not going to go there. We're not helping you. We're enabling the illness. We're making the illness stronger in our family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. And so what are the signs that a relationship is being strained by untreated OCD?
It's the same as general strained relationships.
Okay.
The people around them express dissatisfaction. There's the dissatisfaction with the relationship is more than the satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
people start avoiding their partner or the other person. And they start socializing separately. Mm-hmm. Or the partner or the family members not wanting to go home. Or colleagues not wanting to do a task with a person, you know, or a project with a person. So all these kind of normal things that showing that the relationship is being strained, you know, gets exhibited in that relationship as well. And then often what you find in relationships is that we do a lot of things out of love for each other. Mm-hmm. So we leave things because our partner doesn't like it, or we bring activities or do things in a way because our partner loves it or likes that.
Yeah.
And that's normal.
Yeah.
So when the person don't realize, but listen, OCD is driving this kind of request, and we act into that. You know, it's an emptiness or bottomless pit that we're trying to fill here. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how many times we're going to adhere to that kind of request, it's not going to change the illness.
Yeah, yeah.
And that person then can become overly tired, and that can play a role, you know, at their work or other social activities where they become irritable there because they're not allowed to express their sort of frustration with their partner, but they can do it somewhere else. Or they spend so much energy trying to adhere to these sort of illness requests that they haven't got energy to do their job.
And I can imagine I can imagine there's also a lot of guilt attached to that as the family member, and you love your partner, you love your friend or your colleague, you have that love for them, but now you feel like you have to pull away because of the frustration attached to the relationship. I assume there's guilt that goes along with that as well, on both parties, in fact.
Yes, yeah, Rooks. Remember, this illness doesn't give pleasure.
Yes, exactly.
So that's very important. So with that will be guilt feelings and that. And because, you know, when the normal activity is I do something out of love.
Yes.
Now, if I'm telling you, you know, I'm not going to wear different clothing, you know, every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I feel guilty because it feels like I'm not hearing your, you know, I'm not supporting you as my partner.
Exactly.
Or if it's a colleague that, you know, we need to do things in a certain order. No, we're not going to do that because it doesn't feel normal. But actually, in fact, it is not normal because we're working with an illness.
Right.
So helping means something different. Mm. So normal helping, I can listen to my partner, my colleague, and we can work together. When there's an illness, it's different. And then we have to help in a different way. And people, that's why it's important to understand that there's an illness and describe it to each other, how the person experienced on the inside and how the family experienced it on the outside.
Yeah.
And then looking at, okay, what's actually helping? What's supporting this person? And that depends on the severity. You know, and then there are different techniques how to sort of put boundaries down for a person with an illness. Mm-hmm. And then working with those boundaries, but just realizing that this illness brings an uncomfortableness into a relationship.
Right.
And getting used to that uncomfortableness is okay. It doesn't mean I'm not loving. It just means I love the same as before, but I'm helping in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. And then another, I guess, an important part of any relationship, and particularly these kinds of relationships with people suffering from mental health issues, how can boundaries be set without isolating oneself?
Very difficult. Because remember, this illness tends to isolate a person because they're so busy with their thoughts and that.
Yeah.
So within the relationship, I think part of it is that acceptance is that, you know, I've got an illness, or my partner or family member or colleague has got an illness. We need to manage this differently. So what can I, you know, sustain in my interaction with the other person? Mm-hmm. So some people, I've got a huge capacity to absorb another person's sort of compulsions. It doesn't bother them. They can work with it and they go around. Other people can't. It really throws them. It sucks them in. So it's being honest with yourself about what can I do? And that's an interesting concept. A lot of people say, but I can do that. Yes, but can you do that sustainably? Or do you use so much energy that it leaves you with nothing else for anybody else? And the more you work with that, the more you develop the boundaries, both for the illness and your partner, but also for yourself. Because if you look at the Bible, it says very clearly, we have to love our neighbor as we love ourselves.
Right.
So the boundaries are for both people. And remember, the boundaries, where it becomes a bit more complicated, is not just for a normal relationship. It's for a normal relationship plus for illness. And differentiating between those two can sometimes help for families and for couples to work out how do we manage this illness and how do we manage each other.
Right.
And that sustainability is very important because I can maybe do something for a month or for 2 months, but then it starts taking so much energy and joy. And then also another important question around boundaries is, what can I do in love? Often people do things for a partner or a family member, but they do it begrudgingly. They're actually not doing it in love. They say, well, I have to do this. And that is not a good principle, because if you don't do something in love and in faith, you know, you're doing it in sin. Even though it looks beautiful on the outside. And that's sometimes difficult for the non-ill people to come to terms with, in terms of, okay, but I'm doing this out of resentment. And then it's not the person with the illness that's got the problem. It's the other healthy person that's got the problem. And that's where boundaries and laying it down and laying it down with love, you know, it's complicated. And it's not something that just happens overnight. It's an ongoing process, because boundaries within relationships are not fixed. They evolve over time as relationships evolve and develop. So someone with OCD in a relationship, how the boundary looks at the beginning and how it looks sort of midway and towards the end of a relationship is totally different.
Right. Wow.
And it's okay. It can be different.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so what can loved ones do then to support without necessarily enabling OCD behaviors? You touched on this the other day, and how sometimes we do the things, we just go along with whatever it is that's going to bring them that relief, even though at the end of the day, it's not actually helping. So what can we do then?
Well, there's a couple of things people do. One is to differentiate between the illness and the person, because that helps identify the problem. And then you can work around it. And keep it, because that allows you to have a longer term view. What did we do in the past? What made, you know, managing the illness easier? What made it more difficult? When we did that and that, did it actually make any difference to the illness? The interaction with the person, what, you know, how is the person managing the illness? Are we helping them to manage it in a different way? Or are we just actually helping them to avoid the concept that they've got an illness? If we normalize it. Because by doing those kind of things, you engage your cognitive thinking patterns, not just emotional. Because when we're in a relationship, we tend to work more on emotional thinking. So that, and that is designed for the here and the now. It's not designed to look at the past, the present, and the future. And that's where the cognitive side comes in. And you want to engage that side so that you can think over time. And then be honest with yourself. Okay, I can put this boundary down, or I haven't got the guts to do that because I'll feel too bad about that, but I can do this. And then you work with it. And then just remember, this is a chronic condition. So being realistic with your expectations of the other person is very important. Because once you've identified it, this is an illness, often people will want to fix it.
Correct.
And for the vast majority of this of these OCD conditions, you can't fix it. You have to manage it. And you have to keep in mind that, okay, it will get better, but it also can get worse with external triggers. So how do we manage that when it gets worse? Mm-hmm. What that does, it allows the person to live. Mm-hmm. Because if I have a perspective that my partner has to be fixed, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter what happens outside, they always have to have the illness under control. It means they can't be normal. Mm-hmm. Because normal persons, people get thrown by, you know, what happens outside.
Right.
So by allowing my partner with the illness to also be thrown, and then working with that makes it more realistic and actually creates space for the other person to live. Mm-hmm. And I see that very often, is that people get impatient. You know, they want to fix the other person.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they put a huge amount of pressure, and the whole focus then goes onto the illness and not the person, because that's where you want to be. You want to have the focus on the person so that they can manage the illness differently.
Exactly.
And the relationship needs to be primary so that they can manage the illness and the impact of the illness in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of support or like therapy or I don't know, some kind of support groups for the families and loved ones of people going through OCD?
There are a couple of websites, you know, where people can go. There's lots of information on the internet now these days, which is wonderful. You know, it's just reading up on that, what to do. Family therapy can sometimes help if people are really stuck, you know, in terms of how to look at the illness. Often when people are in therapy or spend, you know, they're seeing a psychiatrist, getting the family involved and getting that education from the specialist about the illness, and then looking at, okay, what are we doing that's supporting it, and what are we doing that's making it worse, can help the family.
Okay.
And then, you know, in that support also be realistic, you know. If you want to help and support, you know, small steps, much more sustainable, and that can help much further in the future.
Got it. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jerry, for coming through once again and teaching us a little bit more about OCD. I think for those who have family members going through this, I trust that this conversation has been educational and informative. Thank you so much for your time. I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Okay, thanks. Have a lovely day.
Thank you so much.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.